This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehia Swuhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight,
African lion has been significantly reduced in scale and scope, based on concerns that we all have about the safety of our troops and those of our partners.
That's the commander of U.S. Africa Command on the decision to curtail U.S.-led African lion exercises due to coronavirus. Details coming up. Also, Algeria's government has canceled political gatherings because of the coronavirus. And UN investigators warn Burundi's coming elections could be compromised by increasing repression of political opponents. We'll have these stories and more ahead on African News Tonight. A top story, one of the U.S. military's largest exercises in Africa, dubbed African Lion, has been significantly scaled down due to the threat of the coronavirus. VOA Pentagon correspondent Carla Bob was first to hear the news while speaking with the commander of U.S. Africa Command on Capitol Hill and has the details of what's to come.
The massive U.S.-led African Lion exercises in Morocco, Tunisia, and Senegal were supposed to involve 9,300 troops from 8 nations. The troops would use these exercises to improve military readiness and integration while preparing to combat transregional threats. But there was one threat African Lion organizers weren't prepared for, the coronavirus. General Stephen Townsend, commander of U.S. Africa Command, first told VOA and the Wall Street Journal about the change after testifying on Capitol Hill Tuesday.
African Lion has been significantly reduced in scale and scope, based on concerns that we all have about the safety of our troops and those of our partners.
Exercises with troops being housed in close quarters are now cut. Townsend says the change mostly affects the Army component of the exercises, because the soldiers' drills involve close contact.
We're going to continue on with some training events that require less interaction between large troop formations, like air activity, naval activity, and maybe some special operations activity.
Some of the U.S. troops who had already deployed ahead of the official March 23rd start date will be able to finish their tasks, including the academic portion of the drills, which had already started. But many African Lion organizers are already shifting their focus to the next set of drills in 2021. Carla Babb, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
Algeria's government has canceled political gatherings because of the coronavirus. Health Minister Abderrahman Ben Bouzdib said in comments broadcast on state television that the government was acting to slow the spread of the disease with 20 confirmed cases in the country. There was no immediate comment from leading figures in the political opposition, known as the Hirak, over the move. Yesterday, Prime Minister Abdelaziz Jarad said the country faced an unprecedented multidimensional crisis and urged people to make fewer demands of the government and reduce their street presence. The comments by the Prime Minister, according to Reuters, were an apparent reference to a year of weekly mass protests, which are continuing even though they have already led to many changes at the top of the ruling hierarchy. The demonstrators are demanding wholesale changes in the power structure and the army's withdrawal from politics. The protesters forced the ousting last April of Abdelaziz Bouteflika after 20 years as president and the arrest of many senior figures on corruption charges. Algeria's authorities have publicly praised the protest movement as a moment of national renewal and pledged to meet its demands. In December, the authorities held a presidential election to replace Bouteflika despite vehement opposition from the protest movement, which said any vote held while the old ruling elite remained in power would be illegitimate. President Abdelmadjid Tebboune, who was elected in the vote, has promised to change the constitution in order to satisfy public demand for change. UN investigators warn Burundi's coming elections could be compromised by increasing repression of political opponents, economic and social instability, and growing criminality. The UN Commission of Inquiry on Burundi has submitted its report to the UN Human Rights Council. Lisa Schlein reports from Geneva.
The UN Commission is appealing to the international community, especially to Burundi's neighboring states, to persuade the government to hold free and transparent elections. But the three-member panel indicates there are few signs that will happen. Burundi's presidential, parliamentary, and municipal elections will be held May 20th. Senegalese jurist and commission president Dudu Dien says the elections are taking place within a widespread climate of impunity for serious human rights violations. Dien says witnesses have given damaging accounts of actions by members of the ruling party's youth league, the Imbonerakure. They accuse them of carrying out killings, rape, extortion of goods and funds, and forced recruitment into the party known as the CNDD-FDD. Dien also voices concern about the clampdown on freedom of speech, noting an increase in media censorship. He speaks through an interpreter.
The government has continued to use the judicial systems to silence civil society and the media. Human rights defenders remain arbitrarily detained. We are very concerned by the increase in hate speech with a political and or ethnic dimension. This is circulating unrestricted on social media. We also note the silence of the Burundian authorities on this matter.
Dien calls the political intolerance in all the provinces of the country deplorable. He says the commission has documented numerous human rights violations, mainly targeting political opponents, including several members of the National Congress for Liberty. He speaks through an interpreter.
They have been arbitrarily arrested and detained for participating in their party's activities. And some were also victims of violence and torture, while many others were killed. Their family members, especially women, have also been targeted and were victims of serious violations, including sexual violence.
Burundi's ambassador to the UN in Geneva, Renova Tabu, says the report is politicized and that is regrettable. He says his government is used to what he calls the Commission's smear campaigns. Since it was established in 2016, he says the Commission's reports have been full of lies, defamatory, and insulting allegations. He says Burundi is an open and peaceful society, noting that 10 candidates already have registered for the election. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
Former Liberian President Ellen Johnson Sirleaf recently gathered women leaders from across the world to launch a special initiative to encourage female leaders across Africa. Among those at the event was former U.S. Assistant Secretary of State for African Affairs, Linda Thomas-Greenfield. She said it's time for more women to lead governments in Africa. Linda Thomas-Greenfield spoke with reporter Moses Garziwi while she was in Monrovia.
We had three former presidents here today, all women. Only one elected, and that was Madam Sirleaf. The other two had acquired the position. They were true reflections of what the future holds for Africa. Africa is more than 50% women. It is time for a woman to again take on the reins of government. We do have a president in Ethiopia who was appointed, and we're very, very proud of her, and we look forward to seeing her successes. But it's time for an election. Now, I think people will say, what about the United States? I think it's time in the United States as well. Unfortunately, the process this time around didn't lead to a woman being selected by the Democratic Party, but I do think that it is time for us in the United States also to elect a woman as president.
You've traveled the African continent. You serve as ambassador in Liberia. Later on, the Senate to become the assistant UN Security for African Affairs. What do you think is the real holding point? What is stopping African women from exceeding?
No, I think it's two things. I think one is cultural. You're a very patriarchal society all over the continent of Africa, and men rule, and of course they don't want to give up power. So I think that's one reason. The second reason I think is cultural as well, that there are many people who have not yet come to appreciate the important role that women play on this continent, in terms of building the continent, building the economy, supporting their villages, their communities, and their country. African women are in leadership positions in the international community. We had Antoinette Saye, who is now in a senior position at the IMF. We had former finance minister of Nigeria, Ngozi, who also has had senior positions in the World Bank. We see African women in senior leadership positions, and we know that they're ready to take on the reins of government. We saw it with President Sirleaf, and we're ready to see it again.
Is it because of maybe the way women are stereotyped when they get into politics? The reason why most young women aren't venturing into politics?
I think this is what we've been here doing over the past 2 days, is helping young women understand that they are ready to be successful in politics in Africa, and giving them the support, the courage, the mentoring that they need to really launch their careers in politics. And I think we're going to see some really positive results from the experiences that we've had today with the extraordinary women who participated in the Amaje initiative.
Should we say the Amaje initiative is going to be one initiative that will shift the way women think about getting into leadership position?
Politics is really nasty. It's nasty anywhere in the world, but for women it's particularly nasty. And there's a fear factor there that sometimes will discourage young women from getting involved in politics. What the Amaje Leadership Initiative is about is helping these women understand that they should not fear, that they should pursue their ambitions, and that they can succeed, and they will have the support of the older women, their elders, who have gone before them.
Could we say, because Madam Sirleaf has been an icon for women leadership in Africa, would be one reason why this initiative will succeed and the new generation of women leaders will surely emerge?
Absolutely. Madam President is really a role model. She set the bar. Someone said in our meeting that she didn't just open the door, she actually provided the path for women to go into politics and succeed.
That was Linda Thomas-Greenfield, who served as the top U.S. diplomat for Africa from 2013 to 2017 and was posted at several U.S. embassies in Africa during her career. She spoke with journalist Moses Garziwu in Monrovia. You're listening to African News Tonight, live on the following frequencies, 15580 and 6080 kilohertz on the Voice of America. I'm Yehiz Wuhib in Washington. Nineteen past the hour, here's a recap of our top stories. The U.S. Africa Command has decided to curtail U.S.-led African Lion exercises in the continent due to coronavirus concerns. Algeria's government has also cancelled political gatherings because of the virus. And UN investigators warn Burundi's coming elections could be compromised by increasing repression of political opponents. And for more news and information, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Unemployment is rampant among African youth and women, exacerbating poverty levels. But in Kenya, a new initiative aims to tap the country's agricultural industry to create new opportunities. From the Kenyan capital, Nairobi, VOA's Ruben Chama reports. The new program aims to create more jobs for women and youth in all levels of the agricultural sector. Ann Nyaga is Kenya's Chief Administrative Secretary at the Ministry of Agriculture.
The main objective of the program is to create sustainable businesses along the agricultural value chain for the youth and women as we unlock the challenges that face them in the sector, be it problems of land, challenges of access to information, agricultural financing, the skills and the knowledge.
She says the new initiative will spread across 8 counties. The $50 million US dollar program aims to support 2,400 women and youth-led agribusinesses. The European Union, the Danish International Development Agency, DANIDA, and the UN Food and Agriculture Organization, FAO, are funding the 5-year program. Jane Maigwa is a Kenyan entrepreneur who runs a company that processes and exports macadamia nuts.
We are creating jobs at the processor level, at our factory level, and at the supply chain, all the way to the farmers, and enabling farmers expand their incomes, providing stable market with competitive prices, because we have access to the global market. We are trying to buy directly from the farmers so that the farmer gets the best value from our prices.
Working with county governments, the program managers will establish 8 business incubation hubs to provide training, business advice and financing to women and youth in agribusiness. A key focus will be implementing the appropriate farming practices to encourage sustainable use of natural resources. Simon Modu is the European Union Ambassador to Kenya.
What we're looking from these businesses, we want to see something like 17,000 new jobs in agribusinesses created. And we want to see that feeding through as well to smallholder farmers. So the target is that indirectly, some 200,000 smallholder farmers should be able to get a better access to markets, services and inputs, and drive growth of the Kenyan economy in this agri-biz sector.
In Africa, agriculture remains the quickest way to fuel economic growth and employment for young people. With more than 60% of unemployed Kenyans being young people, the EU diplomat says the new effort will channel resources to a crucial sector that can absorb unskilled and semi-skilled workers.
Because one of the ideas is that you can help the banks be able to assess the lending, not just on the basis of collateral, i.e. show me your land title, but rather show me your business plan. Is it innovative? Is it inspirational? So this is, for me, really what we should be doing.
But in recent months, Kenya and other East African countries have been battling the worst desert locust invasion in 70 years, which is threatening food security. Mette Kudsen is the Danish ambassador to Kenya.
I was in Samburu earlier, where we could see where these small grown ones all over the ground. It's terrible to see. So I can understand the question that this is really something where there needs to be a priority on trying to address and prevent this becoming even worse.
Experts have praised the new wave of innovation in Kenya. So far, officials said hundreds of young people and women farmers have abandoned traditional ways of farming in favor of innovation and technology. Ruben Chama, VOA News, Nairobi.
In the past week, one Kenyan died and 12 others were wounded when two rival military factions from Somalia fought in Kenyan territory. Locals say the Jubaland militia had crossed into Kenya a month earlier, pursued by the Somali military. Analysts warn that continued tensions between the two countries are threatening broader security in the region. Rael Ambor has the story from Nairobi.
About 2 months ago, 47-year-old Noor Ahmed found a stray camel in Mandera, a town in northeastern Kenya. He assumed it came from a nearby Somali village, but he dared not to return it. Noor Ahmed says Kenyan security forces closely monitor the border, making it difficult for villagers on both sides to cross. It is for that reason that Ahmed wonders how Jubaland forces, a militia ally to a fugitive regional Somali security minister, were able to cross into Kenya, leading to a gun battle between them and the Somali army on Kenyan soil.
And this is a fixed exposure to us by our government. We are supposed to have been protected by our life and property by the government of the Republic of Kenya. What is happening is there is no protection on the borderline. We are, those of us who are living, I'm currently living 500 meters from the border to Somalia. And what happened is there is no school, there are no the commercial activities, there is no even communication.
In the aftermath of the clash, Kenya's president accused Somalia of a flagrant breach of Kenya's territorial integrity. Kenya sent a delegation to Mogadishu to meet with the Somali president Sunday. The two countries have also been feuding over a piece of the Indian Ocean covering 100,000 square kilometers. In addition, Somali militant group Al-Shabaab carries out frequent attacks on both sides of the border. Security analyst George Musamali says these disputes have revealed a fraught relationship that may have a negative impact on security in Somalia, the region, and beyond.
Of recent, we had Mohamed Farmajo becoming the president of Somalia, we've seen strained relationship between Kenya and Somalia, especially the Mogadishu government and Nairobi. And the suspicion by Mogadishu has been Kenya in supporting Jubaland was somehow sabotaging security and peace in Somalia. And this has been the bone of contention. Then the maritime issue came up.
The clash between Somali forces in Kenya signals a fluid security situation that terror groups can take advantage of, according to analyst Abdi Wahab Sheikh Abdi Samad.
If the foreign tourists now are inside the Kenya crossing under the watch of the government, what will be the lives of the people on the border?
Al-Shabaab is celebrating right now, because when they have seen the tension between Somalia and Kenya is worsening by day. Now, right now, in fact, they are celebrating. Now they are getting a loopholes. They can easily, make a havoc both Kenya and Somalia, because there is no security collaboration between Kenya and Somalia.
Kenya has for decades been an ally of Somalia, hosting thousands of Somali refugees during and after the Somali Civil War. In 2011, Kenya sent troops into Somalia to fight Al-Shabaab. Raya Lombor for VOA News, Nairobi.
And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehi Swuhib in Washington. For all the latest developments on the continent 24/7, visit our website at voaafrica.com. Please stay tuned for Straight Talk Africa with Shaka Sali coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Mokbili Abaro, and our engineer, Misha Dubinsky, thanks for choosing the Voice of America.
Host Larry London for Border Crossings, VOA's Worldwide Music Request Hour, every weekday at 1500 Universal. Tune in to hear your favorite songs and artists, win prizes and giveaways, and get the latest scoop from exclusive celebrity interviews. Send in requests to our Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram, or call 202-618-2077 to have your favorite music played for the entire world. Don't miss Border Crossings every weekday at 1500 Universal.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bonga flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. And it's happening right here, Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.
The Voice of America's Global News Program, International Edition, brings you an in-depth look at the biggest news stories of the day. Nobody covers the world more comprehensively than VOA. Our correspondents gather the news and the views of the most seasoned experts on international issues. Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 17:05 UTC on The Voice of America.
Hey, sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 16:30 and 18:30 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.